See, the title of my talk is Tying the Chesapeake Bay Model to Agricultural Management in the Chesapeake Bay Watershed. I was actually given this title to talk about. It's not my choice, but I can talk about it probably better than the other person who gave me this title. Here's generally the concept of the modeling structure at the Chesapeake Bay Program. The Chesapeake Bay Program is not the EPA. It is the EPA, it is all six jurisdictions, that's six states, District of Columbia, and a group called the Chesapeake Commission, which is actually representatives of state legislatures. So when I say Bay Program, I am meaning that entire entity there. This is the structure of modeling at the Bay Program. This is the estuary model here. There are models within models here. Basically, there's a water quality model and there's a hydrodynamic model. This is the watershed model here. Most of the results you see in my talk here will come from this model here that we run out of the Bay Program coordinating office in Annapolis. This represents atmospheric deposition here. Here we bring in monitoring data of concentrations, put that on precipitation, and we can get deposition to the watershed. We also use a model called CMAC that Robin Dennis is going to talk about this afternoon to do all the what-ifs. What's the impact of the Clean Air Interstate Rule? What's the impact of the Clean Air Act amendments? Things like that. So you have changes here that affect deposition, lots of changes here on the land, animals, point sources, everything here that in turn influence what happens in the Chesapeake Bay. Bottom line of using these models is primarily for the past few years has been trying to attain water quality standards. Over the past 5 years, we have changed water quality standards in the Chesapeake Bay from things like fishable, swimmable, to actual needs of the living resources. The toughest of those water quality standards, and they are DO, chlorophyll A, and SAB and clarity. The toughest of those is dissolved oxygen, okay? This is the hypoxia question in the Gulf of Mexico. So we know that these critters here need certain levels of dissolved oxygen. We related it to the uses as you would for a water quality standard. But what is it going to take to meet these water quality standards in the estuary? Well, we use these models to figure that out. We use the watershed model to determine what the loads are to meet the toughest of our problems, which is DO in the main stem of the estuary right here. And then we use the model in turn to say, well, what kind of BMPs is it going to take? What type of point source discharges will it take to meet those load reductions to in turn meet the water quality standards? Now that I saw what Tom's presentation looked like, I'm going to cut more to the chase here. Tom had this slide as well. My examples here are going to be primarily the Susquehanna River Basin as a whole, which encompasses New York, Pennsylvania, and there's a small bit of Maryland that flows into the Susquehanna. This is model results right here. The Susquehanna, according to the model, is responsible for about 44% of the nitrogen load annually to the bay, and 22% of the phosphorus load to the bay. Tom mentioned that the big disparity here would be the Conowingo dams, but also there's a lot of differences down here in the James River in the southern part of the watershed. The soils, the geology is entirely different in that Piedmont region, causing higher sediment loads per acre than you would find in the north. So that's why the James pops up here as the largest source amongst all the major tributaries. Now I'm going to go just inside the Susquehanna right here. This is looking just at the Susquehanna Basin, New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland combined. This is, according to the model, the responsibility of all the major sectors. This is the agricultural sector right here. About half of the nutrient nitrogen load from the Susquehanna is coming from agriculture, according to the model. This much, about a quarter, from atmospheric deposition, and the rest our point sources and runoff from urban lands. And this is a snapshot in time for example, 2005. This is a contribution from agriculture for phosphorus, just from the Susquehanna. These are the point sources, and this is legacy sediment and urban right here. This is the kind of information that managers want to know, okay? What you know, I have a limited amount of money here. Where should I spend my limited amount of money? We produce a lot of graphs like this. For many stakeholders, from the federal level, state level, local level. The segmentation of the model is quite refined. You're looking at a snapshot here for the Susquehanna. So it looks like it'd be worthwhile to spend your efforts here on manure and chemical fertilizers in the agricultural sector. And everyone kind of knows that, but managers need proof. They need to go out there with proof, and that's what they use our model for. Here's the same cut. And here we've taken that ag sector manure and further broken it down to responsibility by beef, dairy, swine, and poultry. So if you're going to go after a certain sector within agriculture manure, this would give you an idea. As scientists, it would be great to put some type of error on all these numbers, but managers don't want to see those numbers. You know, they just want how much is responsible from poultry in the Susquehanna and vice versa. So this is the nitrogen cut. This is the phosphorus cut here. This is the same chart here. What I was showing is 2005. These are trends in nitrogen loads from the Susquehanna Basin starting back in 85. Then we have a 15-year gap here. And in the past 6 years, and these are our goals right here. This is what is needed here to meet the water quality standards for dissolved oxygen in the main stem if all other major tributaries would do the same. We have to get from here, 118 million pounds of nitrogen, down to 81.0. That's a huge effort considering what the history has been. This is the same cut, but here it's divided by jurisdiction. This is Pennsylvania's portion, this is New York's portion of loads of nitrogen, and this is the small Maryland portion. We use this history here extensively for accountability. All those investigations and audits we've had in the past few years, they want to know what we have done, who has been responsible, who's lagging behind, things like that. We send out a lot of information like this for accountability reasons. But this is really the primary focus. What is it going to take to loads where we are now to where we need to go to meet the cap load allocations, to meet the water quality standards? So once we had the cap load allocations, the states needed to develop a strategy. We call these tributary strategies of what they're going to do on the ground, in the air, to meet their cap load allocation. We used the model and credited 40-plus non-point source BMPs in all the source sectors here, ag, urban, septic, forests. We know what the planned discharges would be for 400-some facilities throughout the Chesapeake Bay watershed. We have commitments from EPA and the states to reduce atmospheric deposition through various programs. We spent about 3 years going back and forth with the states on developing these strategies. The model was used for these strategies to determine if, in fact, it would hit their cap load allocation. This is a list of agricultural BMPs that are credited in the model. We have almost all programs here. You don't really need to read this here, but everything is there. Both traditional programs and all of these more pie-in-the-sky things that if they took off, we would yield substantial reductions in nutrients and sediment to the bay. All right, so we have these strategies. In developing these strategies, managers ask logical questions like, well, how much is it going to cost me to clean up the bay? Where am I going to get the best bang as far as nutrient loads to the bay, absolute loads or load reductions per acre of BMP implemented? Where do I get the biggest bang for the buck? Those are really, really important questions, and we use this model to give answers to those questions. It turns out that in developing these strategies, we work one-on-one with each of the states, developing them and local watershed organizations to show them where they get the biggest bang, where they would get the biggest bang for the buck. They think dollars. They really do think dollars. And we needed to take this modeling information, which is load reductions, and tie that to cost figures as well. They brought in a Blue Ribbon Finance panel, how much it's going to cost for the cleanup of the bay. The answer is about $15 to $16 billion. All right, they wouldn't touch this project unless we gave them an idea of how much is it going to cost. What kind of money do you need? And then they came up with recommendations on how to finance that. We used the same modeling information to go to the legislatures on regulatory options, which are the best funding and policy options to pursue at the federal, state, and local level. So it's really taking it beyond the science, into the management, into the policy, into the economics of the whole thing. This is the bottom line results of a project that was done for the Bay Commission, which again is state legislatures, often legislators sitting on the Environmental Committee, what we're seeing here is how much of this load reduction do we need from the Susquehanna would be achieved by waste treatment upgrades if we just took it to the limit of technology. How much would be achieved by nutrient management? We would get 28% cover crops. We could get 15% of the total load reduction. We associate this of how much it costs to reduce a pound of nitrogen for each one of these practices. These costs here are generally annualized capital costs. If you put all of these practices here, these are the top six for the watershed as a whole, and did it all together, we could achieve 78% of our load reduction that is needed for the bay as a whole at a cost of $9 per pound. You can debate these numbers forever and ever. You can debate the cost, you can debate the modeling input, but we have to put it out there. We have a team of five people that work on this model, and our job is to improve on this on these numbers, both the output of the model, which is loads, and the cost figures as well. This is where we are for implementation on those five very cost-effective practices in the Susquehanna. This is where we are for point source reductions. The strategies say we need to achieve this much. This is where we are for levels of nutrient management. Strategy says we need to achieve this many acres. This is where we are in cover crops now. And look at this huge gap right here in cover crops compared to what the states are tracking now for cover crops versus what they have in their plan to achieve the cap load allocations. Conservation tillage, nitrogen and phosphorus feed management, a lot of emphasis in this in Pennsylvania's tributary strategy. There would be a considerable bang for this and an effective, cost-effective bang for this if they can get it, you know, into commercial mode and doing it on a large scale. Results of the model here, that putting all the strategies together for all seven jurisdictions, that the plan says that agriculture is responsible for 64% of the load reduction to hit the cap load allocations. And this is the other sector's responsibility. That's going to cost 13% of that $15 to $16 billion that we need to clean up the bay. If you want more details on this cost effectiveness study there's a website right there. And again, the way this plays out is they take this report, it's not just published. The Bay Commission here actually goes to the state legislatures and environmental committees, and they in turn bring it up before higher groups within the state legislatures to actually get things going on the ground. Biofuels in the Chesapeake Bay, a lot of discussion on this in this conference as a whole, a lot of discussion this morning on the Mississippi River Symposium here. What the model is working on here in this project is what would happen if we were to increase corn acreage in the Susquehanna Basin by 114,000 acres. We would increase loads by 2.5 million pounds, all right? We're going the wrong way. In the Susquehanna, we want to reduce 36 million pounds of nitrogen annually to the bay. This much corn would increase loads, 2.5 million. Soybeans also would be an increase. But one of the bottom lines of this report right here is alternatives. There was a lot of talk this morning and throughout this conference on switchgrass, perennial grasses, and what are the benefits for water quality for doing that. So I took 114,000 acres here, put it into switchgrass rather than corn, and we get a net reduction of loads of nitrogen to the bay just for the Susquehanna Basin. You add BMPs on that, you get further reduction here. This is really a pie in the sky where I had 380,000 acres of switchgrass. What would the benefits to the bay be? We would see a reduction of 11-12%. That's huge. The report has these bottom lines, increased corn production, will add nutrient pollution if not accompanied by conservation members, so on and so forth. This is the message that needs to go to the state and federal legislatures that are responsible for policy changes. And the model is being used to verify these bottom line statements right here. And the model is being used specifically for the Chesapeake Bay region. I don't think they have this kind of information like for the Mississippi, where it's just as important. Right? This is our accountability right here. our focus. Another focus, Pennsylvania nutrient trading. Personally, it seems to me like there's a lot of eggs going into nutrient trading. This is point to non-source trading in Pennsylvania to spur agricultural implementation. I'm not going to go into this, but we've done a lot of assessments of this. The trading program is using information from our model to actually do credit. Doug Parker is going to talk about this a couple times after me. This is my last slide right here. What's the purpose of the model? It's really to measure the environmental effects of particular management schemes for planning purposes. It's totally a planning tool. Whether we meet those water quality standards in the estuary has nothing to do with the model. That is all from the monitoring program. The model is not going to tell you that we've achieved our goals. It's totally monitoring information. We use the model to do these, tell us where we are now, where we need to go, and how do we get there. I pulled these headlines here just from last Friday's scan of the newspapers to show you, and the model has something to do with all of these headlines here that I grabbed at random. Poultry seemed to be a big issue in the Mid-Atlantic region or in the Chesapeake Bay last year. Baltimore Sun, poultry power seen saving the bay. Maryland has to begin looking at development fee. So it's not just agriculture. The focus is not entirely on agriculture. Washington Post, the Senate panel moves $28 billion farm bill. Everyone probably knows something about this one here. The Delmarva on the Eastern Shore, a Virginia program aimed at expanding manure from state poultry counties. This is a project where, because of the model's results, they could justify spending, I think, $600,000 of technical support for a transport program in two counties in the Shenandoah River that actually looks like it's going to play out. And that's all I have.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jeff, for putting it.